squeeze on. Wilbek scores against his old club.
Thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and welcome to the Clock End Talk. You can follow us on Twitter at @clockend_talk. Just something else that we've released quickly while I've got your attention this week is download an app called @voicebite_. You can find them on Twitter. Just search your store, your Google store, iTunes store. Grab the VoiceBite app. It'll allow you to record 15 seconds of audio. Send it over to @clockendtalk or #CET. And you can ask us a question and get on the podcast. We couldn't do it without you guys listening and supporting us. So to give you guys an opportunity to get on the podcast, we welcome it. Okay, let's get into it. We've got Tony with us. How are you, Tony?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks, yourself.
Yeah, good, mate. Good. Carl, how are you, buddy?
Good. Yeah, good, thanks.
That's all right. Savvy?
Yeah, we're good, mate. How are you?
Good, mate. And Schwing, how are you, mate?
Brilliant. Thanks for having me.
No worries, mate. It's a pleasure. Okay, let's get straight into it, guys. Swansea versus Arsenal, or Arsenal versus Swansea. We got the result, 2-1 in the end. It wasn't a lot of predictions that we put out. I put 2-1, but I think Savvy went 4-1 and a couple of other predictions. Yeah. But it wasn't the game that we expected. So we'll start with you, Tony. Give us your thoughts on the game, mate.
I mean, I wasn't entirely surprised. I mentioned when we spoke about the game the other day that they got a 0-0 at Tottenham and weren't really troubled in the game. They, to use a useless phrase, parked the bus. And they're quite good defensively. Their away record was really good. They'd only conceded one away goal before yesterday, and that was in a draw. Mm. So I don't think they'd lost away before yesterday. They just make it hard to play against them. They hit Abraham Long, who's quick and strong and just a nuisance. So getting the result is a good result. I know people look at the table and see them in the bottom four or five and think we should be beating them 4-5-0, but sometimes just don't look at the table and look at the way they play and previous results and realize that they're quite hard to score against. I mean, as I said, they went away to Tottenham and got a 0-0, so the magical Harry Kane couldn't score against them. Right, we done all right. As I said, anything that gets you to 3 points, performance is obviously we want to play well every week, but performance is the secondary aspect. I'd rather be awful and win every week than amazing and draw.
What was the atmosphere like at the stadium?
It was a difficult one because we were so bad in the first half. Pretty much everyone. I don't think there's anyone you could single out as being good in the first half. Mm. But we wasn't really on the players' backs. It was a bit different because usually when we're bad, it's like we make life hard for the players. But it wasn't. There was a lot of moaning, but it was more targeted at individuals, and it's the standard individuals. Every time Ramsey passed the ball, misplaced the pass, it was he's useless. Xhaka, I mentioned to you guys before, when he was spraying it out wide to Kolasinac, and I don't think he gave any away when he done that, people were going, oh, we've seen you do that before. Like moaning about it, and I'm thinking, well, the guy's in space, he's clearly been dangerous, he scored and got an assist. Mm. That is the ball that's on, so if that ball's on, keep playing it.
Yeah,
but I think the fans, a lot of it's difficult, I don't want to tarnish all fans with the same brush, but the fans weren't entertained, so some of them wanted to moan just because, regardless of result, they wanted to be entertained and they weren't.
Okay, Carl, what was your take on it, mate?
The first half was poor. I think throughout the game, one of the key talking points was the pace of the play. I don't think throughout the game we were passing it quick enough. A lot of sideways passing through the first half, and also when we took our foot off the gas in the second half after scoring, I think Kolasinac provided a big boost in the second half. Got that big boost of energy. Took that goal very, very well. Had a good assist as well afterwards. Nice. Again, Ramsey with a great controlled finesse finish. I think Xhaka, after I slated him last week, I think he had a decent performance. His distribution of the ball was good. A few sloppy moments, but apart from that, I think he had a good performance. Cech again, kind of being a bit of a liability for the first goal. Coming out and then stuttering and then coming back in again. Mm. It was a good finish by Klukas, not going to Not going to dispute that, but I think Cech needs to have a bit of a look at himself past couple of performances. Obviously, there was other people to fault for that goal, Koscielny being one of them. Bellerin letting Klukas ghost inside there as well. But apart from that, a win's a win, I guess. And we move on to the next one, with Man City.
Mm-hmm. Sebi?
Yeah, I think, as Tony mentioned, I think Swansea were very well-drilled and they had a game plan which clearly worked in the first half. And our usual bad defending or individual mistake led to their goal. And after that, we looked very laboured and the tempo was gone. And then we came away with high tempo in the second half. And I think Wenger gave a very good halftime talk. I think players mentioned it after the game, and even Wenger mentioned it. And one thing I liked it, I think in the first half we were trying too much to attack from the right side, and it was clearly not working. And what we did at the halftime, I think it was a tactical change. We started attacking from the left side, and Kolasinac. We know he's a very good, he's a attacking threat. So he capitalized on it and he scored and assisted the goal. And then it was all us players. I think most of the players had a very bad first half. Mertesacker, I think he was troubled a lot with Abraham's and IU's pace. Then Koscielny's mistake led to the goal. Sanchez, I think he gave too many balls away, but that's usual for him. He does that. And I think Ozil was good. Xhaka was good. Xhaka was very good in the second half. And Ramsey was good. Lacazette, I think he was instrumental for the goal we scored because his move led to the goal. But then he didn't have a very good game. He looked... it was more down to Swansea being very deep. They were very, very deep and there was no space to run into. So... he didn't really had many chances and wasn't really much involved in the game. Otherwise, I think we take the 3 points in the end. That's the thing that matters.
So, and Sebi done our ratings. He usually does it each week. You can find that at clockendtalk.blog. Sebi, between the three of them, Cech, Koscielny, Mertesacker, an average performance with fives. Monreal, once again, he's pretty good, isn't he? He gives you what you're going to get every week. So, consistency. Yeah, that's right. And Bellerin, mm-hmm. Six as well. Ramsey would have been close to your man of the match.
Yeah, I think according to me, him, Ozil, and Kolasinac were. You can include Xhaka on his second half performance.
Yep.
But I think these were the four best players. But obviously, Kolasinac got the goal. He got a good assist. So I think he takes the man of the match.
Okay. Schwinn, what was your take on the game, mate?
Not going to argue with 3 points. Wasn't pretty. Didn't enjoy watching the first half. Not a lot more can be said than you guys already touched upon. I like these sort of wins when it's dirty. We're often told that Arsenal can't do it, and it bothers me. Just yesterday, and we'll of course talk about this more, but Chelsea went to Bournemouth and got that 1-0 win, and that's all these pundits, at least in the US, were saying, that they fought out the result. They fought out a dirty win, although they didn't even concede. We did, and it was a bad day at the office. The boys were not stringing passes around. It was tough. The atmosphere was already building tense in the first half. And it gets to the players, especially the newer ones. You know, Granit is still new. If he doesn't get that confidence early on into the game, it's going to be a little hard for him. And it's already been a little hard for him this season. So I don't mind conceding that goal. Koscielny slipped. And yes, Cech made that mistake. But we paid them for it later on. Mm-hmm. So I like these sort of results, as horrible as they might be to watch. I think we got lucky with both goals. Props to Kolasinac for keeping his head down and the ball down. And I think Ramsey got extremely lucky with his finish. I don't think it had enough venom on it to put it in, but somehow it did creep into the back of the net. So 3 points, happy day for the Gunners, and happy day for Schwinn.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Just on Shaka, Tony, what's your take on it, mate? It was a game of two halves, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he was awful in the first half. He was just pretty ineffectual, but then so was everyone else. So was everyone in front of him. Mm. He's only ever going to look good if when he's giving the balls to the people in front of him, they're doing anything with it, which they wasn't. So, I mean, the second half was a lot better and it was a lot clearer because he was finding the space, but mainly because Kolasinac had a lot more space. But I don't think he was awful in the first half. I think he was just there. He was nothing. And in the second half, I'd say he was good.
He was copping a fair bit of, and you wouldn't have seen it because you were at the ground, but he was copping a fair bit of slack on the social media, Twitter and Facebook and whatnot.
I always say we always have at least one boo boy for some reason, not our own fans. I mean, it's been Giroud in the past, it's been Ramsey in the past, it's been Ozil many times, and at the moment it seems to be Xhaka. Mm. I think, I was saying this to someone yesterday, that one of the website, a football website that I look at quite often, they done a team of the season so far based on you had to be top of a certain statistic to get in the team. So it's not saying the best 11 players, but so like Monreal was in there for the most interceptions, and then obviously the only other Arsenal player in there was Xhaka for most completed passes. So, and the thing is with Xhaka, he's not playing the what I'll call the El Neni passes, the backwards passes and the sideways passes. A lot of these passes are forward.
They're all going forward and looking for runners.
Exactly. So to have the most completed passes while playing the role of a deep line playmaker, so to speak, that's impressive. Mm. But the problem is I always say the stuff he does well is the stuff that doesn't get highlighted. So even when he has an amazing game, I've been at games where I thought this guy is absolutely unbelievable. Mm. But because what he does isn't stuff that he's not running around at 100 mile an hour, taking shots everywhere, diving in and winning last-ditch tackles. So the stuff he does well is the stuff that you're never going to see on any highlights package. But then obviously if he makes a mistake, it would be on a highlights package. So I think with him, he's just a bit unfortunate in that what he does is something that isn't really like rated or isn't highlight worthy.
Mm-hmm. I seen somebody tweet out that not understanding what it actually means. He tweeted it to us, and I can't find the tweet at the moment, but he was saying Shaka's starving Lacazette of ball. What do you think he means of that?
I've seen some similar comments, but they're just saying that once Lacazette makes a run, obviously Xhaka's clearly getting the main blame that Xhaka's not giving him the ball. But what happened, especially in the first half yesterday, I will defend Lacazette. I thought he was exceptional in the second half yesterday. But again, it's stuff that's not going to get highlighted because it wasn't chances. But his link-up play was excellent and he made some brilliant runs. But in the first half, what he was doing was making runs, but he was going on his own. Mm. So the right option was to not give him the ball because he was running the channels, which I've said many times I'd like him to do. So I can't really criticise. But when no one else was going, even if that ball would have gone to him and he would have got it, he would have been wide with no one within 30, 40 yards of him. So it was maybe not his fault, but he was running on his own and not for the team. Mm. And the reason he wasn't getting the ball is, I said it's completely different when you can see the whole pitch, but the reason he wasn't getting the ball is it's a wasted ball because he's not going to keep the ball when the teammates are 30, 40 yards away. Yeah. So I can see how people would say it looks like he's making a run and not getting the ball, but when you look at the whole pitch, a lot of the times in the first half, you could see exactly why he wasn't getting the ball. And as I said, I thought he was Kolasinac will get man of the match, but there's an argument for Lacazette being our best player in the second half, like with his link-up and stuff. And as I'm not his biggest fan, but he was very good. And it's the first time I've actually seen him disappointed at coming off.
Yeah, okay. No worries. So it threw me a bit actually when you said Lacazette was up there. So because not many seen it as you've explained it. So it's good.
Yeah,
to get,
as I said, because it's not the stuff he done wasn't highlight worthy. So he didn't have any shots or any. He didn't have any chances, but he made excellent runs off the ball. His link up play was excellent. The amount of times that the ball bounced off him and he moved in, like even for the Kolasinac's goal. Obviously, Lacazette doesn't get an assist for that, and it's not an assist, but that goal doesn't happen without him doing what he done. His link-up play in the second half was exceptional.
Yeah, okay. Carl, what do we do with Cech, mate?
I don't know. Well, he's compared to the other keepers we got, I think he's better than Ospina or Macy. Macy had a good game during the week, and Ospina can pull out some fine saves. But at the moment, with the current crop of goalkeepers we got, he's probably our best one. Mm. He's had a few hiccups past few games, but yeah, I think that should be addressed at the end of the season. I don't think Wenger's going to address it in January because he's probably got too much trust in the man. But at the end of the season, I feel that we need to get a new keeper and someone young, but someone already tried and tested, someone like Butland.
Is it Martinez? He's on loan.
Yeah.
Can he be bought back in January or is it a season-long loan? Does anyone know? No?
I think it's a season-long loan.
As far as I know, it's a season-long with no recall. I could be wrong, but the other point of that is he only made his debut for them literally like 3 days ago, so he's not getting in their team. So it's not a case of he's setting the world alight and we're going to try and call him back.
Okay. That's what I was just double-checking because I haven't really been following his progress. So. Yeah, it's going to be interesting what happens at the end of the year, and especially if we've got to replace Sanchez. You're saying Cech, and like we've discussed many times, Butland's not going to come cheap, so it's going to be very difficult, actually, on what we actually do with Cech. I don't know what the answer is, but yeah. Also, some interesting news that's come through today is Savvy Eddie's been offered a pay rise, mate, 650% on a 5-year deal. Not bad.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. Yeah, not bad. I think very good for him. I think it's good for us also. It makes sense because I think right now he won't be getting much. It would be some pennies only, but now he's coming through, he's taken his chance, so he clearly deserves it. So it's good, and that means the club is serious about him and they will give him chances. So it's good for all of us.
Yeah, it's good, and and hopefully he plays a few more games. I'd like to see him get in the Premier League this year at some stage. It'd be good too. So, look, we've done a podcast on 2 days ago, so not a lot's happened since then, but we'll run through a couple of things. One thing that caught me eye, and anybody can jump in here, Everton are looking to take Sanchez. Yeah. So
good luck with that.
Yeah.
Nice joke.
That was one that type of come out. Also, we've got a Europa League game coming up. Red Star again.
Yeah.
And then we've got Manchester City next week. Now, I'm going to just touch quickly on Manchester City because I've heard a lot of comments that basically we're just going to turn up to accept that we're not going to get the 3 points. And I thought, well, that's pretty big bold. That's a bold statement off a few people. I'll go to Schwinn. What can you expect out of that game, mate?
It's going to be tough. I think we're going to... I mean, we're obviously going to fight for a result. I don't believe that we're going to hunker down completely and fight for, a point. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think we're obviously going to go for the win, but we're going to be a little more pragmatic about it. We've seen it. We've seen us do it against Chelsea most recently. And when we didn't do it against a team like Liverpool, which I know is a bad example because of the transfer window being open at that point. But I think we're going to fight. We have a few good results up our sleeve. And City didn't have the most comfortable ride this weekend. I had that game on and I was watching it through the periphery of my eye as the Arsenal game was going on. But they didn't have the easiest game yesterday. So I think some film study is required to see what West Brom did well and try to incorporate that into our game and still stick true to our playing style, you know, be quick on the counter and make sure that we try and retain possession in their final third as much as we can. It's going to be hard especially with their clinic, the clinic they put on. But we're going to fight for the result because a good result can push us forward and keep them where they are. And I think Wenger knows that early on in this season, we've fallen back a little bit. And that game and the game against Tottenham is going to be they're both going to be good opportunities to sort of really push into what would be, you know, the top contenders early on into the season. The other way would be harder if we lose or drop points, which I do expect us to at some point in one of these two games. It's going to set us back a little bit. But if we walk away with 3-4 points against in these two games, I'll be a happy customer.
Yeah, I'd be happy. Like you say, I'd really like a draw at best with Manchester City. 3 points against Tottenham, and you know, we walk away with 4 points in the next two games, I'd be very happy. Tony, what's your take on it, mate? Manchester City, because we're not renowned for doing a Jose and rolling up the park the bus, as they say, so we're going to go for the win.
It's a difficult one because we can't fight fire with fire. We don't have the firepower they do. And as much as I love Arsenal, I'm not going to lie to myself and everyone else and say that we are on that same level. So we've got to be a bit more cautious. A draw will be a good result, and anyone that pretends otherwise is kidding themselves. So, yeah, it'll be interesting because... I'm watching the Southampton game they've just scored. I'm not saying we should park the bus.
Yeah.
But as I said, we have to be a bit more pragmatic. We can't fight fire with fire. We can't say, sort of, you have the ball and we'll have the ball, and it's like basketball, because they will outscore us if we do that. It'll be interesting to see how he starts, because, I mean, we've all discussed many times that we're a better attacking side with Sanchez and Ozil in it, but a much worse defensive side.
Mm.
If we accept that Man City are going to have the lion's share of the ball, which they will, it then comes into question that do you look at the likes of Iwobi and potentially Jack for Ozil and Sanchez? This is one of them games where Wenger's going to get crucified no matter what, because if he starts them two, Ozil and Sanchez, and we lose, it'll be, oh, you knew that them two couldn't defend, why did you start them? On the other hand, if we start, say, Jack and Iwobi, or Iwobi and one other, if we move Ramsey higher up and maybe start Elneny or Coughlin, it will be, oh, you've shown no ambition, you've gone to a potential title rival and not played your best player. So Wenger can't really win, but it'll be interesting to see how he lines up.
Mm-hmm. And the game earlier in the week, the against Red Star, a lot will depend on who he starts there as well as what he'll do on the weekend, won't it?
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see, because Jack and Iwobi and... well, mainly Jack and Iwobi, Coughlin and Elneny have been starting in them kind of games. So if they start again, it would be a big indication that they're probably not going to start at the Etihad on Sunday.
Mm.
So it all depends on... yeah, that. I mean, that, as I said last week, when Elneny played against Norwich, I was delighted about that because it meant he wouldn't start on the weekend. So I think similarly this Thursday that it will show what Wenger's thoughts are for Sunday by the lineup selected on, what day is it, Thursday?
Yeah. Okay. Carl, you got any add on that, mate?
I'm going to say something that might be very, very controversial, but I wouldn't play Giroud in the Europa League fixture. I'd start him against Man City. Because whenever we face Man City, he seemed to be a potent threat. And, yeah, I think this is his sort of game. I think you could make the argument for Lacazette, because Otamendi sometimes makes that Man City defence shaky. He can come out, he can push up a little bit forward when the other defenders stay back. So Lacazette can get into them little pockets there and run in behind. But I think this is a Giroud game, and I want Giroud to start on Sunday.
I just wonder what... and I hear what you're saying, but I just wonder what that does to Lacazette's confidence. You know, you bought me in for whatever you paid for me, and now you're going to sit me on the bench against one of your biggest games of the season.
I mean, if we're going for like you know, like fantasy formations here. I'd stick them both up front, try the big man, small man formation, but we all know that's not going to happen with Wenger. Mm. But regardless, I want Giroud starting that game. Even Lacazette is featuring in that game, I want Giroud to start.
Mm, interesting. What do you think of that, Savvy?
Yeah, I think it will be a very good tactical battle because we know Pep Guardiola is a tactician. And I think recently we have a very good record against Manchester City. And recently we have been turning up in big games. So I am expecting a result from Arsenal. But yeah, it's Manchester City is on fire. So it will be a very difficult game. Mm. But I think Wenger will have some plan because recently in big games we have seen that. He sets up according to the opponents. So it will be good to see whether he changes the formation because right now they are playing four at the back and we are going away. So most of the teams, what they do when they go to Manchester City, they try to match them. So it will be interesting to see if Wenger tries to match them or keeps our current formation. But yeah, I'm expecting a good result, and I really want Wilshere to start because it will be a game where we'll have less possession and we'll have to do best when we have the ball, and Wilshere is the man who can do that. But yeah, it all depends on the Europa League game. If he starts there, then definitely he's not starting at Etihad, so it will be interesting to see what happens.
I haven't done my maths, Tony. I think we were talking about it last week. With the Europa League, we're top of the table, play Red Star. If we win this game, we secure next stage? Or win,
we win the group. We win, no, we win. We, if we win this, we win the group. So we're first, which in theory gives you a preferential draw in the next round as well. I just want to touch on Cole's point quickly about Giroud. Personally, I wouldn't mind Giroud starting. As Cole said, it's a fantasy to believe they're both going to start together, especially against Man City, because you have to match them in midfield. But I just want to, on that, where I'm saying Wenger can't win, if he starts Giroud and we lose, it'll be, oh, you've signed someone for 50 million and they're not even getting in your team for the biggest games. Mm. I know, obviously, there was different circumstances around it, but it's exactly what happened when Lacazette didn't start against Liverpool. Everyone gave it, 50 million and you can't get in your team, blah, blah, blah. So,
yeah.
Again, I don't disagree with Carl's point. I actually wouldn't mind seeing Giroud in there. But you've just got to realise that no matter what Wenger does, he can't win this in terms of the press and the Twitter fans, quote-unquote fans.
Yeah, look, you're not going to please everybody, are you, like, at the end of the day? But that's what I just wonder. I'm just looking at it, what it does. I don't care. I just want the team to perform and do well. But I just wonder what it'll do to Lacazette's confidence, that's all.
No, I think Lacazette will start. My personal opinion is he'll go with Ozil, Sanchez and Lacazette. Mm. But as I said, if we lose, people go, oh, you know, they're not the best, most defensive of players. We're going to a team that are going to have a lot of the ball. Why didn't you plan for that? As I said, he can't, Wenger literally cannot win. No matter what he does, there's going to be criticism.
Yeah, they're going to criticise him, yeah. Okay, so...
Just another thing, sorry,
yeah.
Tez.
Yeah, mate.
Just another thing to keep in mind is that these back-to-back fixtures may sound a little daunting, but there is a little bit of a silver line there already, which is we have the international break in the middle.
Yeah.
Now, I personally think we have a better chance of getting points against City than against Tottenham. So either way, whichever way the result goes against City, that international break might actually help a little bit in just getting the team together after, you know, they've gone for their individual duties and then come back into the team. So just another thing to look out for in the future, depending on how our result goes against City, that international break might actually help out in one way or the other.
Yeah, you make a good point there because I actually forgot we have the international break. So, you make a really excellent point. Okay, guys, we'll move away then. So we'll just go to a couple of followers' questions. We've got one from Glenn who used the VoiceBite app, and thank you, Glenn. So, mate, you'll get on the podcast. Also, I'll go around the table, guys. So we'll start with you, Tony, and here's Glenn's question.
I know it's early, but here's a question for the podcast. This week brought up Wenger's 800th game in charge of Arsenal in the league. What is your highlight and what is your low light of these 800 games?
Tony?
The low light is definitely the Champions League final loss, and it's not putting a blame on him, but I've never felt so bad about football as I did after that game against Barcelona. So that's definitely the low light. The highlight is difficult because, like, when you think of the Invincibles, which was definitely his best team, it was a whole season, so you can't pick out one of the games. I mean, like, winning the league at Tottenham was unbelievable, but we drew the game, there was negatives, but it felt great to be winning the league at White Hart Lane. Similarly, winning the league at Old Trafford was brilliant, and that game we actually won. I would probably go with winning the league at White Hart Lane because it capped off the Invincibles. We're dancing around on their pitch with a trophy that they haven't seen in their lifetimes, most of them. It makes it even better when you know the stories around it, that the police told us not to celebrate, and all of our players had agreed. But then, because their players were running around celebrating the draw like they'd won the league themselves, our players thought, OK, you want to see a celebration, let's go. So just for that story around it, everything around the day, I think that would be the highlight. But if you're looking in terms of, if you just looked on a blank piece of paper and didn't know anything about football, I've just basically said that my highlight of these 800 games was a 2-2 draw where we was 2-0 up. So that's the only sort of negative of that.
Okay. Carl?
Well, because I'm a young Arsenal fan, I've pretty much experienced only the Emirates era. Pity me. But the low light for me definitely was the 6-0 at Chelsea. I remember watching that and screaming at the players, like, do something. Like, it was just terrible the way that they performed on that day. And obviously, the referee probably still doesn't know the difference between Gibbs and Oxlade-Chamberlain. But the highlight definitely was the Emirates with the Barcelona game where we won 2-1. You know, Andre Arshavin, Wilshere played an amazing game. We pretty much played better than Xavi that day. Wenger, in hindsight, definitely had some highs and lows. But great manager, 800 games. Congratulations.
Savvy, what are you, Mike?
Yeah, highlight obviously Invincibles, because I think that is a feat that is not going to be matched again in the Premier League. And I think highlights, so there are too many. I think he's the one who helped us get into the new stadium. He, some people even credit him for making this happen. He revolutionized the football club. He made us very big. That is obviously a highlight. Then low light, I think Carl mentioned 6-0, then 8-2 at Manchester United. And recently, not getting into the Champions League. And the Champions League final, obviously. These are the low lights. Otherwise, I'm really happy with Arsene Wenger. And congratulations to him.
And what about you, Ashwin?
I'll go for a little different route here, considering everything that's been said cannot be argued with. I mean, for anyone who is an Arsenal fan from far away, they can tell you, and I think Tezzy would agree, that Wenger is sort of like a father figure for most Arsenal fans. So personally, I would say the highlight would be Henri's return, and then him scoring and going and celebrating with the bench and with Wenger. That was one of the most exceptional moments I've witnessed ever in my life, and it was on a telly. So apart from all the results and the victories, the titles, I mean, obviously that's up there, but that was another exceptional moment, I think, in Wenger's time. And the opposite would be the rise and shine of the Wenger Art Brigade. I think that still bothers him, obviously. He is a pragmatic person at the end of the day, and he realizes that not everyone can be satisfied or needs to be satisfied. But the toxicity that has completely drowned the club in the media and sometimes in the stadium is, I'm sure, a big burden on him, and he feels the pain of that every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, I have to agree with what all of you said. Everybody pretty much touched on everything, but I'm actually just, as you did, Schwinn, just go a little bit of a different route. And as last season was the only season we never made Champions League football. To have a manager manage your team for 20 years and get you in the top four of the league on, and it's no Manchester City budget, it's no Manchester United budget. And for 20 years, he's managed to get us to Champions League football or European football.
With Marwan Schalmack.
I think it's a brilliant feat. Lows for me, look, you guys touched on a lot. However, I will mention the Bayern Munich game. I think it was last Champions League when they just smashed us. With 10 goals in two games or something. That just, there was a recent one and it just doesn't sit well. But other than that, look, congratulations, 800 games for managers. It's unbelievable. So, okay. I've got another couple of questions, guys. So, MAA Gaming. Tony, would you play Ramsey in right attacking mid, similar to how Spurs play Eriksen?
No.
No.
Simple. No, I mean, he's capable. This goes back to what I was saying about if we go defensive-wise at City, then, yeah, if we're playing a defensive system, then you could play Ramsey there. Mm. But he hasn't got the range of passing Eriksen has. Let's not pretend because he plays for Tottenham that the guy's not good at football. Christian Eriksen is a very good player. I think Ramsey's best when his runs come from deep because he gets in there sort of unnoticed. Yeah. His goal yesterday showed that. His work rate is phenomenal, so he can get up and down. It's as I said, in a defensive system, I could see the argument for playing him there. But it's like, who say yesterday? Why, if you put him there, that means you're dropping Ozil and you're playing potentially. Okay, I don't know if people wanted Jack to play with Xhaka and Ramsey in an advanced position, but I mean, I can't see it. I think, especially against a defensive team, you want Ozil in the team, surely. Mm. Like, he's most likely to create anything. He controls the tempo of the game. He's always probing. So I think there is maybe a case for playing Ramsey there, but I wouldn't make it a regular thing. I think what's going on is a lot of people just want to see Jack in the team, sort of regardless. So they're just trying to find any way possible to get him in the team. And as you all know, I love Jack, but I don't think that would be the right way to get him into the team. I think it makes us weaker in other areas just to get Jack into the side.
So you think, in merit of the question, it's move Ramsey over there so Jack can slide in?
That's why I assume he has asked the question.
Yeah.
I don't think that is the right answer. As I said, I think they're just trying to find the space for Jack in the team. So they're moving other players, but there's no question that as a 10, Ozil is better than Ramsey. So it doesn't make sense to do that. But as I said, I think people are just trying to find any way to get Jack into the team and they're fiddling about with things that shouldn't be messed with.
Ramsey's had a good couple of games, though, hasn't he?
Over the season, but bar Monreal, he's been our best player.
Mm-hmm. No, he's played really well. And the old joke will go around, somebody or die. Well, you've already killed my multi, so... Dortmund, bloody Dortmund. Anyway, Carl, we've got a question from, and it just come in, Sam, you're still there, Carl?
I was going to say, I think Carl's just gone.
He just dropped off. Didn't like the question, Sam, but anyway, we are coming through on Skype, so we'll go to Savvy on it. Sam has asked, what's your take on Lacazette not making 90 minutes? Personally think it's ridiculous to buy a number 9 to consistently take him off. I think we've touched on it a few times, but go for it, Savvy. We might touch on it again anyway. Yeah, if you don't answer.
Yeah, we have discussed it before. I think it's down to his fitness. And he's still settling in at Arsenal. It's a new league and a very competitive league. You have to be at your best physically to play full 90 minutes week in, week out. It's because of that, and another reason could be Wenger wants to also play Olivier Giroud, who is an equally good player if we compare him to Lacazette. So these are the only logical reasons which come to our mind. And I think these are the only reasons. I think over the course of the season, when he physically grows into the game, I think he will complete 90 minutes more. So it's really only a matter of his fitness.
Yeah, it comes down to fitness. And when you have Giroud on the bench, well, you, to in tough games, you've got to bring Giroud on. And I even called it last night and said I was quite happy to see Giroud come on at half time. And after watching Lacazette and what Tony said about Lacazette in that second half, I was wrong. So I'm glad I'm no manager because I got it wrong. Because I could just see Giroud coming on and the way them balls from Xhaka was coming. It was looking for Giroud's head and the way...
when he came on also, I think he had 2-3 good chances. He was looking dangerous when he came on, Olivia. Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad it worked out as it did, so...
Yeah.
Okay, a couple of yous might want to answer this one, but I'll ask Schwinn first and then we might go around to you, Tony, because you might have a comment on it as well. Schwinn, how do you think Gazula would fit into the team when he returns?
First of all, I can't wait for the day he does. I think he's one of the most important players, if not the most important player in the role that he fits into in our team. Now, having said that, we just briefly discussed this before we started recording this. We're not sure, and even I'm not sure, whether he'll directly fit into this 3 or 5 defender system. I personally would like us to go back to a four person backline and have him in midfield. Now, we can do that in a couple of different ways. We've, of course, seen him in a 4-2-3-1 come into his own. But we could also see a 4-3-1-2. Now, I know this is all wishful thinking when we, you know, start deliberating on formations when it comes to Wenger, but I do think that Wenger will change his system in order to have Cazorla in the team, because he does stuff that no one in our team does. He's essentially a defensive Jack Wilshere. He takes players on and he has the skill and the quick feet to get out of the most defensively pressured situations. He likes taking players on. And the best case was when we saw him play against City at the Etihad. I think that day he really showed his true quality. And Wenger loves to have that sort of player in his midfield. Mm-hmm. So I think a 4-3-1-2 would fit our system really well, where we can have in midfield, we can have Xhaka as a defensive midfielder and maybe Ramsey and Cazorla as a split central midfield partnership. Maybe even rotate Jack into that, depending on the fixture. And then have Sanchez and Lacazette lead the line with Ozil playing at 10. Gives us a little bit less on the wings, but Lacazette and Sanchez have a decent work rate, and they'll definitely build. And Lacazette will definitely build up on his work rate, so they can, of course, pressure the flanks. And Kolasinac and Hector Bellerin are also pretty fit, so they also have the extra fuel in them to run up and down the line a little more. I think that's a good system, and I think Wenger will do all he can to bring Cazorla back.
Okay, it's a good headache to have as well. So it's not like it's it will cause him some worries, and a lot of fans will probably say, "Oh, why didn't you start Santi and whatnot?" But it isn't a bad headache. Tony, have you got any to add on that, mate?
I mean, I don't think we'll go to a 4-3-1-2 because it gives us no width at all, and the problem is, if you see your whip coming from your fullbacks, it leaves your centre backs very isolated. So it's a very interesting one because, as I've said to you guys before, Santi's our most important player in terms of he makes us tick. Our results are always far better with him than without him.
Yeah.
But I just really don't see how he fits into this system. Someone will comment and say that he takes Xhaka's place, but I mean he doesn't. He's not defensive minded enough. He's always been brilliant. His record's actually unbelievable when he starts with Coquelin, because Coquelin does the defensive mopping up and Santi does the footballing part. So it's not, if anything, it would be Cazorla with Xhaka, but then you lose the energy and the breaking from deep of a Ramsey or a Jack. So it's a very difficult one. I don't think we'll change system. I think a lot of people seem to be moaning about this 3 or 5 at the back, but I think they're just moaning because it's different and they don't like change, because we're on our best ever home run since we've been at the Emirates. Not best ever, sorry. Best since we've been at the Emirates. Our win percentage is ridiculously high at the moment than what it has been for recent years. We won 10 league games in a row at the Emirates and 13 in all competitions at the Emirates. And that's all since we've changed. Since we've changed shape. So it does work. As I said, people will moan just because it's different and it's not traditionally Arsenal. But again, it comes with people saying, oh, Wenger doesn't make change, blah, 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 he's too stuck in his ways. And then when he does make change, they criticise that as well. Mm-hmm. So it's another case of, if you want someone out, you're just going to moan about whatever they do. So I don't think he'll change the shape. If you just look at the cold, hard fact, it's working pretty well. There's been a few exceptions where we've been awful. Obviously, Liverpool, one of them, but that had...
There was other reasons behind that, wasn't there?
Yeah, there were circumstances around that. Stoke, when we lost, we didn't play bad. A few referee indecisions went against us. And the same as Watford. We wasn't good, but referee indecisions didn't go our way. So I don't think he'll change, but then it does make it very tough to get Santi back in the team.
Do you go to a defensive midfielder roles out as well, wouldn't it?
Well, as I said, problem is he has to play with a defensive midfielder in a Xhaka or a Coquelin, but then you lose energy, you lose too much. In essence, I think Xhaka was brought to do the jobs of both Cazorla and Coquelin, in that he's a defensive midfielder that can start play from deep. I'm not saying he has the range or the ability that that Santi has, but I think what Arsenal were trying to do is take up two roles with one player, which allowed Ramsey to provide the energy. The problem is, if you start Santi with Xhaka, you lose the energy, and then you just end up with two players that can start attack from deep. But none of them are going to get on the end of it. So it's an interesting one. It'll be interesting to see what he does. No doubt people will moan whatever he does. I might potentially moan, I don't know, but it will be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion, and it'll come up in, I suppose we'll find out, what, January, February, I think Santi's back, is he?
Yeah, January, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's annoying that we've not had him for the Europa League groups to get back into fitness, because that's when you could obviously mess about with the system and try in a game that's not too important. The problem with come January, February, every game's important, because all of the cups and knockouts from then on. Europa League will start in February, and it's a knockout. Obviously, you've got if we get through in the Carling Cup, the final's in February, so you can't risk messing about there. The FA Cup's obviously a straight knockout, and every league game's important. So there's not many, there's no, I call, like, second string games to try it out, which is a bit annoying.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. Okay, well, we'll look forward to seeing what happens when that happens. So, I think we've gone through all the questions.
Just another thing, Tez. Sorry.
Yeah, mate.
I don't think Cazorla is going to feature at all this season. I mean, just because of his injury and the amount of time it's going to take him to come back to full team fitness, I don't think we're probably just going to see a few cameos with him. The reason I heard what Tony said, but the reason I still think that we might see a change of system might not be back to a four defender system, but just a change of system in order to fit Cazorla, is because at the end of the season, we don't know what's going to happen with Alexis and Ozil. So we are going to have some openings, if you will, into the team. I mean, Alexis is gone. I think most of us have come to terms with that. But Ozil still might hang back.
Sorry.
And Ozil has been best when Cazorla has been around.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there might be a proclivity, at least, if not a direct intention, to change systems to fit Cazorla in, just because of this whole team dynamic really being up in the clouds right now.
I'll run something by you then, Schwinn. Look, Sanchez, as you said, he looks like we've come to the fact he's going. Let's say he goes in January. Let's say Santi's back in January. Mm. Where would you fit him in then?
Well, there's a couple of things there. Mm. Sorry, Sav, if you want to take that.
No, you go for it first.
First of all, I don't think we're going to sell Alexis in January. It's going to set us back a lot. And I think Wenger knows that. Irrespective of how our season is going, whether it's good or bad, selling Sanchez is going to just make things worse in terms of our performance. And secondly, even if Santi's back in January, he's not going to be anywhere close to fitness, first team fitness. I mean, I think a few weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago, there were some pictures making the rounds on the internet of his two calves from the back. And you could just tell that one of his calves was just half in size. It takes a lot of, weight training and this and that to get back, and then stamina. And let's not forget, he's up there in age as well. So we can't rely on him as much as we could rely on a Cazorla who never had to go through these series of operations. So Santi is not going to be the same player what he was, but he still brings something to midfield which doesn't go with age, that wisdom, that those twinkle toes, the awareness. So we can't build a team around him. Alexis is a player you build a team around, but I don't see any of those two things happening in January.
Okay. Savvy, you wanted to add something there, mate?
No, I just want to say that if Alexis goes, then I think we'll replace him. And I still think, if a 30 or 40 million bid comes in, we are definitely selling him, because that only makes sense. Because he'll be going for free, and everybody knows he's going. So if Cazorla comes back, first of all, I agree with Swin. I think he will have to build his fitness a lot, because his injury, I think it's a recurring injury. I think he's having it since 2-3 years. And I think Koscielny right now is having the same problems which Cazorla had when first his Achilles problem started coming. So, I think if we sell Alexis, then we get a replacement. And I think Cazorla only comes into the team if we change the system, which in current form is very unlikely. So, we really don't know, but it will be interesting to see.
Tony, we've got Xhaka, Ramsey, Santi, Coughlin, Elneny. Who else plays in that position? I'll probably miss
Wiltshire.
Wiltshire. Have we got too many?
No, not really, because we play in a lot of competitions. I think that's probably comparable. I mean, you look at, I'm not digging Oxlade-Chamberlain out here, but you look at Liverpool. Yesterday, they were without Lallana, Mane, Coutinho, and Oxlade-Chamberlain still didn't start. While that is a little dig at him, it shows that all teams that are involved in a lot of competition are going to have many players in one position, because you can't... Like, I've seen a load of comments on Clock and Talk where people say, against Norwich, we should have started our strongest team, and you start your strongest players every week. It's nonsense. Mm. No footballer can play 60-odd games a season, which is what we're going to be playing if we're anywhere near as successful as we want to be. Mm. So you do need a lot of players in their positions. You could also, at a push, add Iwobi into that list, because he has played slightly deeper. It's where he started against Norwich, but him and Jack changed pretty quickly. What is pleasant is, in this system, a lot of them are interchangeable. So a lot of the centre midfielders could, if needed, play in one of the two positions higher up. So obviously, we've already spoke about Ramsey potentially playing there. Jack, we've seen play there. Iwobi, as I've just mentioned. Cazorla could play there at a push. Maybe, I'm not sure now, because his legs might have gone, but 3 years ago, that would have been where most people wanted him to play. So it's not like that we're listing 7 or 8 players and saying there's one of two slots. It's quite interchangeable that a few of them can play in different positions, and we've got a hell of a lot of games.
Yeah, it's okay. You make a good point, I suppose. I just Walcott, and he's, what are we going to do with Walcott, you think? A lot of people are saying we want him to go, but I quite like Walcott. Like, okay, he's a squad player. He comes off the bench, but it was only the Europa League game, and he did well. Yes, the game last week he had a shocker, but that's what Walcott does.
Yeah, I think he's just a very frustrating player. It's a difficult one, because he's going to be hard to sell because of how much he earns and how much we'd want for him. I think when you look at another one, when you look at raw facts, so if you didn't watch any football game ever, you didn't know anything about it, but you looked at Walcott's numbers from last season in terms of his goals and his goals per minute, you'd think, wow, this player's amazing. we all know he's not amazing and he's very frustrating, but you're still looking, if you're going to sell him, you've got to sell him as a 20 goal a season player, because he, not, I'm not saying league goal, I mean all competitions, but that's what he is. Mm. If he plays, he scores goals. As I said, he will frustrate the hell out of you and wind you up, but he will score goals. So you can't sell that kind of player for five million. And no doubt, if Wenger did, he'd get criticised for it. Because, oh, the guy scored 20 goals, how can you sell him for 5 million? Mm. But then when we say we want 20 million for him, people go, oh, you're pricing him out of a move he can't even get in the first team. So, like, would you? What price would you put on him? I'd say he has to be at least 20 million.
Yeah, 15 to 20 at least, yeah.
But then you've got to factor in that he's on about 120 grand a week as well. So whoever's... Look, none of the top teams are going to take him because of how frustrating he is. So you're looking at maybe the Southamptons, the West Hams, and are they going to spend 20 million on a player and then pay them 100,000 plus a week? Probably not.
Hmm. I would. Was it Crystal Benteke? So I would rate him above him.
I mean, it's a very different player.
I know they're a different player, but I mean in that value. Of, I think, for 20 million, was it Crystal Palace paid for him?
Well, but Benteke had a £30 million move the year before that to Liverpool.
Yeah, I know, true, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I got nothing. Yeah, no, you're right, he did, but then he dropped off to Liverpool, then he went to Palace, 20 million, and but I rate Walcott above Benteke. I think he'll give you a lot more goals. So 20 million would be a fair price, but like you say, 120 on the wage is, yeah, I don't know who would pay that. Okay, righto, guys. So we'll get to around the grounds. What did you watch on the weekend, Savvy?
Yeah, it was the Manchester United and Spurs game.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was, first half was very boring. It was all tackles going around. Then in the second half, it improved.
Mm.
United tried and scored. I think it was a lucky goal because Lukaku didn't. I don't think he meant it.
Mm.
Then they got the goal, but Spurs clearly missed Harry Kane because they went clueless whenever they went around their box. So it was a good game to watch, but I think a draw would be a fair result, and I would have preferred that too. And then I watched the Chelsea-Bournemouth game. I think Chelsea-Bournemouth could have scored, but Chelsea, they were well-drilled and they got the win. Yeah, these were the games I watched.
Cool. Yeah, Manchester United, they got the win, but it was a very boring first half.
Yeah,
What do you make of Martial? It was a cracking goal.
I really like him. And I think I've said that before. I would like him at Arsenal. Mm. But I know it's never going to happen. But I think he's a very good player. And he's being wasted at Manchester United.
Mm-hmm. Schwinn, did you catch any games, mate?
Yeah, I caught a little bit of the United and Tottenham game. Altman said, no more need to be said about that.
Mm.
But yeah, I watched the City game, as I mentioned earlier, just on another screen as I was watching the Arsenal match.
Yep.
From whatever I watched, which was maybe not even 10 minutes of it all put together, it was pretty good affair. It was not City just, you know, hunkered down on the West Brom half. And I think there was a little more to it. There was more attacking going on. I think Matt Phillips started, so that gave West Brom something on the counter as well. So that was, I think, an interesting game to watch. Don't be swayed by the scoreline. I think there was just a lot of goals in general. Mm-hmm. And you could just sense that the game could go either way in the beginning, which is, you know, always what you want from a game. So that was an exciting match to just sort of watch from the side of my eye. Other than that, nothing really. I think Liverpool had an easy one on the trot. And as we're recording this right now, Southampton and Brighton are playing. Right. And I think, Southampton's up by 1-0. But I'm not sure who scored. I do remember seeing a free kick hit the crossbar. So I'm guessing that was something related to that, perhaps. But yeah, other than these two games, I didn't really watch any other football.
Yeah, I've got that game on now too. Okay. Yeah, Tony, do you watch anything, mate?
I watched the first half of United Tottenham in a pub with friends before I went to the Emirates. It was very painful. I was with one Tottenham friend and one United friend, and even they were bored. It was that bad. And then I got home in time for the second half of Chelsea, which wasn't much better.
Yeah.
I've been watching the Southampton-Brighton game now. That's why I stopped in one of my answers, because it was Stephen Davis that scored. Ward-Prowse hit the bar with a free kick, and Davis.
That's what it was, yeah.
This has not been too bad. This might not interest most people. I watched Aston Villa against Birmingham, which is a championship game, but they're both from Birmingham. So obviously, I don't know if you know Villa are from Birmingham as well. So it's a local derby.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. It was a rubbish game. It was 0-0, but it's hilarious the first half because the fans were just throwing stuff at the players. It was at Birmingham. Wow. So the Villa players, including John Terry, were just getting pelted with everything possible, like the whole of the first half. Every time they had a corner, it took about 5 minutes to take because they were just getting like, anything that they could find to throw was being thrown. So it's quite funny. And it's a proper derby, so there was some bit of handbags, some meaty tackles. So yeah, that was about as interesting. I said the football was awful, but yeah, it was about as interesting as the games I've seen this week. And I also watched a match of the day last night, so I've seen the highlights of all the games.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I obviously the Arsenal game, I watched a bit of Serie A as well as our local comp, the A-League, but I had a look at the Watford-Stoke game because I actually thought Watford would have got the points there, but they weren't as good as they have been, Watford. So Stoke got the win on the, I think it was 1-0. So
can we take a second to talk about Charlie Adams missing that game?
Yeah, mate. Yeah.
Have none of you not seen it?
Nah. What happened? Sorry.
No.
He missed an open goal from, like, literally a completely open goal from 30 yards. He beat the keeper, and he literally just had to roll it in the goal and missed. It was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen.
I didn't see that.
No.
That was in the Stoke-Watford game, was it?
Yeah, it was in, like, the 96th minute. They countered. Yeah. The keeper came, Aurelio Gomez came out about 40 yards, and Charlie Adam beat him and then just had to roll it in and didn't.
Well, there you go.
Well, speaking of 96th-minute mistakes, I know that during the Crystal Palace West Ham game, West Ham were up 2-1, and Mikel Antonio had the ball, and he had the opportunity to go towards the corner flag, and he instead opted to just lash out across into the box where there was not a single West Ham player. Ball's picked up by a Crystal Palace defender. They move it forward. Within two passes, the ball is at Zaha's feet at the edge of the box. With one defender on him. Keep in mind, this is the 96th minute, so they are all just running out of juice. Couple of quick turns here and there. Snapshot right into the bottom corner. 2-2. And there was a picture making the rounds on the internet which had Slaven Bilic just down on his knees, probably just praying to the Lord for his job. And Roy Hodgson just elated with the caption saying, "A picture speaks louder than words." But again, bad decisions, you know, just take it to the corner. There's 30 seconds left, but you decide to whip in a cross and look where that got you.
Yeah, no, well, I just having a read of what Tony was saying there, actually, because I must have turned it off. 96 minutes, it was a late chance for Hughes, who can't get the ball around, and then pumps it downfield to Adams, who only has a keeper to beat. He sidesteps Gomez only to miss his shot from 20 yards out off the post. And that's all she wrote. Game over.
That makes it sound like not a bad miss. It makes it sound like, oh, he's hit the post from 20 yards. That happens. But wait till you see.
Yeah, okay. I'll have to have a look at that now. Excellent. Okay, guys. Listen, once again, thank you for sticking with us, all to our loyal listeners. You can download that app, VoiceBite, and like I say, you can just send us a voice message and tell us how we're going. Give us some feedback. If you don't like us dribbling on about other matches, just turn off at this time or fast forward it. Or let us know. So voice bites, that one. You can follow us on Twitter at clockend_talk. We've got a Facebook page going as well. Same at clockend_talk. Thank you, everybody, and we'll be back, I think, next week.
Yeah, I think it will be Monday because we have game on Sunday.
So we'll be back Monday after the game on Sunday. Thanks, Tony.
No worries.
Thanks, Savvy.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Schwinn.
And hi, boys.
We've lost Carl as well, so Carl, if you're catching the end of the podcast, mate, we miss you, and thanks again. Righto, thank you, everybody. See yous.